You're listening to the Therapist Mom Podcast, where private practice and motherhood collide. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajiz, and here's the deal. I'm not here to give you fluff or hustle culture advice. I'm here to give you strategy to build a private practice on your terms, while naming the hard stuff about motherhood and the broken systems we're stuck navigating. If you're ready for honest, practical, and unapologetic conversations, you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. This episode is sponsored by Jane, a clinic management software designed to help you run your private practice smoothly. Choosing an EHR is a big decision, and one of the most important questions I asked myself was, is this software right for me and my practice needs? Jane understands the importance of this question and wants to help you feel confident in your decision to switch. They've put together a whole range of resources to help guide you, including weekly everything you need to know about switching to Jane webinars, step-by-step online guides, and both live and recorded demos. It's all there to help you figure out if Jane is the right match before you make the move. To learn more about Jane, click the link in the show notes to book a free demo. And when you're ready to sign up, be sure to use code ASHLEY1MO to get a 1 month grace period with your new account. Welcome back to the Therapist Mom Podcast. I'm Ashley Kamajiz, therapist, I'm coach, mom of three, and I'm so excited to have you here because this show is all about where private practice and motherhood collide. If I sound a little bit different today, it's because my schedule has just been insane. And the only way to actually get this episode recorded this week was to do it from my car. And I don't have my mic. So I'm going to be recording my podcast from my AirPod microphone. So this is a perfect example of motherhood and my work colliding, of having to just do this from wherever I am. So I'm glad you're here. I think it's going to be a really good episode today because we're going to be talking about something that I get asked about a lot. And it's something that I think is a really important conversation because we're going to be talking about, you know, making the leap from agency work or community mental health to private practice, what it feels like to do that, what I oftentimes see get in the way, and then what to do first when you are ready to kind of make that leap. I want to kind of set a scene though for you if you're listening. Like, this may feel familiar, especially if you are currently in agency work or community mental health, or if you've been there. So just kind of listen and play along with me here, right? So kind of picture this. You're sitting at your desk, kind of in between sessions. You have a full day of sessions. You're probably seeing 6 or 7 clients today, right? You've got a stack of notes to finish. You have a supervision form that you have to fill out that's not even been touched, and maybe some stuff that is from yesterday that still hasn't been completed. And in the back of your mind, you're doing kind of like this math, right? If I only kept the clients that I actually wanted to keep, right? If I only worked with those specific clients, if I could only set my own hours, if I didn't have to ask anyone for a day off. And you're kind of going through these questions, kind of dreaming of this thing. But then your next client shows up and you have to just move on, right? So you kind of shut it down. You kind of put it in the back of your mind because you've got work to do. And, you know, you may even be saying like, well, who am I to want to do something different, right? You, quote unquote, got into this field to help people. And so that thought though, right, that dream, if you want to say, that thought of, well, what if, right? Like, what if there is something different? That's not you being lazy and just being like, oh, I don't want to work anymore. It's not being ungrateful for what you do. I believe it's actually your nervous system that is telling you something, right? That it's something that's probably been lingering in the background for a while, but you've probably just been pushing it down and kind of overriding it. But today we're going to name it, right? We're going to talk about what is that? What is that piece that's kind of surfacing? And then we're going to do something with it, right? You're going to have an actual kind of tangible plan of like, where do you go with that thought? So like, as we're getting started, I want to just make sure like it's clear who I am kind of talking to, who this episode really is for today. And if this is not you, please still listen along. But this really is for you, like if you're licensed, if you're competent in this field, that you've been doing this work for a while, and that you're genuinely good at it, right? Like the work that you're doing in your agency, in your community mental health position, like you are good at that work. You're not looking for private practice because like you fell in love with entrepreneurship or because like you saw somebody on Instagram and they're like, oh, that looks like cool, right? You are good in this field. You are doing great work. And so you're looking at private practice though, because you're looking at it as something about the way that you're working right now, like, is just not working with what your actual life looks like. It could be that your caseload is not sustainable. It could be that the pay is not reflecting what you give or your experience or your competence, right? Your expertise. Or maybe you've had to choose at times between a sick kid or like they have a vacation day between them and a client too many times, and you're just like over with having to kind of explain to your boss what's going on or having to kind of ask permission to be able to show up for your family the way you want to. And I think something that is really, really important to kind of call out as we're talking about this idea of being in an agency, being in community mental health, and wanting to leave. But so, like, mixed into all of that is this really complicated layer that I see so often of loyalty. Loyalty to your clients, loyalty to your team. Maybe it's like to the mission of like the agency or the organization you've been in. You know, a lot of agency and community mental health therapists, like, they got into that work on purpose, right? They got into that agency because of what that stood for. I used to work for an organization that was a nonprofit that specialized in working with children who had experienced trauma, right? Like, I wasn't like, well, that sounds cool. It's because I had a passion for what that organization stood for. And so maybe you wanted to serve people who had limited access to certain resources or services. And so you cared, right? But now you may be wondering, like, if I'm wanting something different, right? If I want to do something that is not in the realm of this organization, does that mean that I don't care anymore? Right? Does that mean like there's something wrong with me that I'm cold-hearted or, I've lost my passion? I don't believe that it does. And so, what I want to do today, though, is to kind of walk through the emotional reality of the transition first, right? Talking about what is that emotional piece, because I think if we skip that part, it doesn't matter, like, if you have a checklist, if you have, a list of things to do to start a practice or to leave an agency. If we don't name and talk about the emotional part of leaving that setting, then we're going to be struggling to actually do the next steps. So we're going to talk about that part. And even if you don't do anything else, even if you don't take any other steps to leave your agency yet, I want you to start to be thinking about those things, right? And so then we're going to go into kind of some actual practical steps in a specific order so that when this episode is over, you know what to do next. So we talked about this idea of loyalty, but I also want to talk about like starting with this idea of guilt because I see this again, like loyalty and guilt so intertwined in this discussion around leaving an agency, right? There's the guilt towards your clients. Again, how many times have I heard, well, like, who's going to take care of them if I leave? That is such a common question I have heard from so many therapists. I absolutely have had that at different times, not just when I've left to go to private practice, but when I have left from one agency or organization to go to another. So I want to be really kind of like gentle as I'm saying this next part, because I think that feeling does come from a real place. You care about the people that you work with, right? That desire, that concern, that is not fake. But I also want to name something that's really true. This may be hard to hear, but this is true. The agency is going to keep running without you. Your clients are going to get assigned to somebody new. The system does not depend on your personal sacrifice to survive. It doesn't. It benefits when you believe it does, right? The system is not going to fall apart. It benefits when you believe that it only keeps going if you are the one there. And so that guilt of leaving, it keeps amazing therapists, amazing social workers in underpaid, unsustainable positions for way longer, years longer, sometimes decades longer than they need to be there. So I think it's worth asking, like, if I continue to stay in this position, who does that actually serve? Is it truly actually serving my clients, or is it serving the needs of this agency or this organization? And so beyond just the guilt of like guilt towards your clients, there's also the guilt towards colleagues. And I've seen this and heard this before too, right? The team that you're leaving behind, if you have been in a setting with high turnover or like just low resources, right? Everybody has such a full caseload. You know how it feels when someone leaves. So, like, the thought of being that person who does that can feel really uncomfortable, right? But again, your colleagues are making decisions for their own lives too. You are not responsible for filling a gap that the organization should be filling. It is not your responsibility to carry the load. And then there is this guilt that I also see towards ourselves, right? This is one that I don't think many of us truly name or really are have an awareness of, but it's this guilt of like, well, who am I to think that I could do something else? Who am I to want more, right? You know, I chose this career because I wanted to help people. And now I'm thinking about like money and schedules. You know, what does that say about me? Do I really care? Or do people think that I don't care? And what I know after years of doing this work and coaching other therapists through this kind of exact transition is that you can care deeply about your clients and also need to be making a living that supports your life. Those two things are not in conflict, right? But again, the system wants you to believe that they are because that belief is incredibly useful for keeping you in place and keeping things running as is for them. I also think it's important for us to talk about identity. A lot of us build our professional identity inside of an institution, an organization, right? The populations that we serve, the team culture of where we have worked. And so there is like this we that forms in those settings. And when you think about leaving one of those, it can feel scary, even if you don't can't name it, right? Like even if you can't name what it is, but it is scary to think about like I don't have colleagues anymore, right? In private practice, unless you are going directly into a group practice, which most likely you would not be doing on your own, you'd be going to work in somebody else's group. But if you're wanting to start your own practice, you have to kind of stand on your own and you have to put yourself out there in a completely new way that like legit is it's very vulnerable to do that, right? You go from being part of something to now building something. And with that need to build something, it requires visibility. And I think honestly, a lot of us are kind of more introverted, or that like if we are more service oriented in our work, which we are as therapists and social workers and mental health professionals and counselors, we're not always comfortable with that, right? But what I think is really, really important to recognize is that being uncomfortable with putting yourself out there, with being visible, with talking about wanting to do something more, does not mean that you're not ready. It just means that you're honest about the fact that this is a real transition and it's scary, right? There is fear under all of this. And that fear usually comes out as I'm not ready yet, right? Like not yet, right? It could be I'm not ready to get clients on my own. I'm not ready to handle the business side. I'm not ready to put myself out there. I'm not ready to fail after, you know, telling people this is what I'm going to do. Like I'm going to fail and that I'm not ready for them to see that, right? But I want you to like take this in and kind of sit with this, that usually most of the time that idea of quote unquote I'm not ready, those thoughts are really about confidence, not competence, right? Being confident and in what you are doing. You already know how to do the clinical work, right? Like you are not in a place of getting supervision. You are not in a place of just coming out of grad school, right? Like you've been doing this work. And what feels unknown is the business side of this, right? The business, though, is learnable. You did not learn it in grad school, but it's not like a personality trait. It's not a skill that you just like have. This is something that you can learn and you can build it. So if you're feeling this I'm not ready piece, like I want you to really get honest with yourself. Is this really about feeling confident or not feeling like you know what to do? So if being confident is not the thing that we're like measuring to say like am I ready to go into private practice? What is then, right? So I want to kind of give you like a more honest framework to kind of think about this because I think the way most people think about being ready when it comes to private practice can oftentimes keep them like either way too long or, you know, kind of prolonging this indefinitely from starting their practice. So being ready does not mean that you have a perfect website. It does not mean that you have a full caseload already. You don't have a business plan. Like, it doesn't mean that you've taken all the courses and listened to all the podcasts, right? If that is what your standard for ready, being ready is, you will wait forever because there's always more that you can learn. There's always one more thing to do. What you actually need to start, right? What you actually need to be ready is your license. Like clear picture or a clear enough sense of kind of who do you want to work with, right? You don't have to have that even like specifically figured out, but like an idea. You need a way to get paid and a way for people to find you. And that is the foundation. Everything else you can build as you go. So a few questions to kind of ask yourself that may be a bit more helpful, kind of like assessing this readiness. You know, do you know who you want to work with or kind of what problems you want to help them with? Again, this doesn't have to be perfect. This doesn't have to be like who you work with forever, but just that like it's clear enough that you could kind of say it out loud to somebody and they might understand that they would get it, right? Do you also have enough financial runway to say like, I'm going to go in on this, right? If you are leaving an agency and going into private practice, or if you're just like quitting another job, right? You need some cushion. 3 to 6 months of expenses is ideal so that you're not making like fear decisions in those first few months when you only have a couple clients, right? That it's like, well, what do I do now? If you have a cushion to say, like, look, I have saved this up, I can finally walk away and from this agency and go all in with my private practice, then you will feel more confident as you're doing this. So this may look like starting your private practice super part-time and starting to put money aside from those few sessions a week so that you have that cushion. And the other thing I want you to really kind of consider and kind of ask yourself, and I think this is important, is are you leaving something? Like, are you leaving towards something, right? Are you moving towards something or are you just running away from the burnout that you had in your previous job? Both of those are valid starting places, right? Like if you're saying, I have got to get out of this position because I'm burnt out, or I know there is something waiting for me over here and I'm going towards it, those are both very valid, but there needs to be a different strategy for both of those. So if you are running away from the burnout, we need to make sure that private practice does not just become a different container for those same patterns, overworking, overgiving, undercharging, right? Like saying yes to everything because you don't have systems in place yet, right? If you are leaving towards something, you probably are clearer on what you're building and why. And so then that clarity will help you to make better decisions early on that will sustain you in the long run. And the other thing I think that like is important is that there's no perfect time, right? There will always be a reason to wait. You know, the kids are in a hard season, finances feel uncertain, maybe your partner isn't on board yet, housing feels unstable, like financially, you know, some of those things are genuinely real constraints, right? But some of them are just the ongoing conditions of life. And so if you wait until those conditions are resolved, you're not going to ever start because there will always be something. So the better question is not, is this the right time? But is what would need to be true for me to feel ready enough to take that next step? Because one next step is manageable and you don't have to build the whole thing today.
We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting.
Okay, so now let's kind of move into kind of an actual plan. So I'm going to give you kind of 5 steps in order that I want you to kind of resist the urge to do all of these at once, but like kind of doing these in an order does matter. So the first is to just get clear on your niche before doing anything else. I think a lot of times people skip this because it feels like it can wait, but I want you to start thinking about this from the beginning. Even if you're still in that agency, start thinking about this. This is going to what is going to help make you findable. This is the difference between a website that will convert, one that doesn't do anything. The difference between a Psychology Today profile that gets inquiries and one that people just scroll past. The difference between somebody referring to you and just adding you to the pile of business cards on their desk. You don't have to have a niche forever. You're not signing a contract to this, but you do need to have one to start. So again, like some of the questions I always like to ask is like, who are the clients you're currently working with that you look forward to seeing? Like if you saw their name on your calendar or you had a schedule that was just this specific type of client that you would feel excited about and not dread. You know, what are the common themes that they might have? What are kind of similarities that they're working through? It could be postpartum moms, teens with anxiety, couples, you know, that are navigating big life transitions, first responders, therapists, or helping professionals, you know, whatever it is, just get specific enough that someone searching for help could find you. The second thing is to know your numbers. And what I mean by this is not the numbers that like you hope are true, but the ones you actually mean. What does it cost for you to live? Right? Like what do you need to have coming home as take home pay to pay your bills, to have savings? What does it cost financially to run a practice? Adding those things together, right? Like that gives you a general idea. But then we need to look at like, well, how many clients and at what fee is going to get you there? I think a lot of times most therapists I work with run into something uncomfortable because they've been inside like these systems that have underpaid them for years, and we've internalized that a number that is way too low. Like we just think that this is the standard. And so then when they start private practice, they're setting their fee at something that they think people will just say yes to, rather than something that not only like reflects the value of their work, but that they need to survive. So I'm not going to tell you what to charge because it really de does depend on a ton of factors, but I'm going to tell you that your fee cannot be based on fear. If you do that, you're not going to be growing a sustainable practice. It's going to be really, really hard. So the fee conversation with yourself is worth spending time on before you get started, before you launch. And included in this is like insurance versus private pay. Again, I'm not going to go into this today. I have several episodes on this. But it is a decision that will kind of help shape everything else, right? Your caseload, your admin load, in income predictability, flexibility. So again, it's, you know, worth thinking through, like being very intentional versus to like what just feels safe. The third step is to kind of set up your infrastructure while you still have income. And this is one where I think like having some timing does matter. If you can do this before you leave your job, right? So getting your EHR set up, I use Jane. I truly love it. It really does save so much admin time, you know, especially in those first few months when everything is kind of new. You're already managing like the learning curve of the business side. They're very user-friendly. I love their tutorials. Love that you can like actually play around with the system before you have to like sign up for anything. So if you do want to check them out, there's a link in the show notes. And if you do use the code Ashley1MO, you get a 1 month free. So you can check them out. But getting like your basic systems in place, right? So this could be live within your EHR. This could be other, you know, separate things that you do. So like how you'll schedule, how you'll collect payment, how you'll do your notes before you start getting people on your calendar. Because once you do start getting clients, you're not going to have time to set that stuff up. You'll just be like improving and tweaking things. So you want to have that stuff set up. And then the fourth step is to start telling people you exist, right? Word of mouth is still the most powerful referral source, especially when you're starting out, but it does require you to talk about it, right? So think about the people who already know your work. It could be like former colleagues or supervisors, doctors that you've collaborated with, other, you know, mental health professionals that you know, people from grad school. These are people who can send referrals before you have a single like website build or online review or anything like that. You don't need to have like a social media presence, but you do have to be visible somewhere, somehow. A lot of times when we are starting out, I see that as being in the ways that we are building relationships, building community, networking. You know, this is one of the reasons why I think community is so important because in the networking hangouts that I run for therapist moms, you know, we need this because isolation is one of the hardest parts of leaving a group practice or leaving an organization and just kind of going out on your own. So beginning to just connect with other people who are in private practice, having other people around you who are doing the same things really just kind of like I think gives this what's the word I'm thinking of? Like this feeling of connection and empowerment, like, okay, I can do this. And then the fifth thing is to give like a real timeline of kind of what does this, on ramp look to going full time and not quitting before you've like truly given this a real chance, right? This is really important because I have watched a lot of people who are so skilled, they are so, capable, give up or just stop and quit private practice before I think their practice really ever had a chance to like get its footing, right? It takes time to build a caseload. So I want you to kind of have realistic expectations so that when you have, the first 2 months might be slow, that you don't interpret that as like, well, this shows that it's not working, right? Most therapists who go into private practice, like in all honesty, it takes 3 to 6 months, if not longer, especially if you are private pay only, to build a caseload that you feel comfortable with, that feels good. And it can be longer, right? Again, depending on the niche, location, fee structure, marketing. So if you leave your job and you don't have a full caseload in the first few weeks, again, you're not failing. It's just that beginning stage. And there is a difference between that. So setting a timeline for yourself, like I'm going to give this, 12 months of like consistency or like intentional effort before I evaluate if it's working. And then truly evaluate it, like not just based on a bad week or a slow month, but based on like, are things moving in the right direction? Okay, so let's kind of pull this all together as we kind of wrap up, right? So if you take nothing else away from this episode, I want you to hear this, that the guilt and the fear you are feeling about leaving are real and it's understandable, right? Again, it's not a weakness saying you shouldn't do this. It's not a sign that you're making the wrong decision. It's just what happens when we genuinely care about people. We care about the work we do, and it's scary to think about like what will happen to the organization or the people that I'm leaving behind if I step away. But it doesn't have to be a reason to not do this, right? And then that identity shift part of this, right? You are not abandoning your values or leaving by leaving an agency or community mental health. You're building something that may be able to actually give back to the community or like align more with your values in a more sustainable way. So I want you to kind of think about this reframe that private practice is not for a certain type of therapist. It's not reserved for like those that are extroverted who've always wanted to do this work, right? Like they're fearless, that they don't have kids or, that they've always kind of been like entrepreneurial. It's a strategy, right? And strategies can be learned and they can be adjusted and built in a way that is sustainable and actually fits your real specific life. So you don't have to have it all figured out before you start. You just have to take a next step. Now, knowing the next step and actually having someone to walk you through that are two different things. So, if you've been kind of like circling this decision, if you've been listening to this podcast or others, or maybe you've been doing like some research or thinking about it every day as you're driving home from work, and you kind of keep coming back to like this thought, I think it is worth paying attention to, right? It's worth kind of exploring why do I keep thinking about this? I do work one-on-one with therapist moms who are building and growing private practices. And in my work, we look at where you actually are, right? So, what is in the way of you getting started or building that private practice? And then we kind of build a plan that fits your real life. It's not a generic roadmap, but that something is specific to your niche, your finances, your capacity, your family, right? So if that sounds like something you need, you can head to the show notes or raisedtoempower.com to learn more about one-on-one coaching that I offer, and we can set up a time to chat about that because I would love to work with you if you're needing that support. And again, like if this episode is something that you're listening to and you're like, oh, I know a colleague that could benefit from this, please share it. There may be somebody else who is sitting at her desk doing the same mental math that you've been doing, and she might need to hear this. So please send it to her. Thank you so much for being here with me today, and I look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Thanks for listening to the Therapist Mom Podcast. If today's episode resonated with you, I'd love for you to share it with another therapist mom who needs it. Be sure to subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. And if you'd leave a 5-star review, it helps more therapist moms find this space. For resources and ways to work with me, head to raisedtoempower.com and check the show notes for all links mentioned today. I'll see you back here next week.